Welcome to Cloudy with a Chance of Trust, a podcast for digital transformation leaders where we discuss the latest cyber attack issues, enterprise security strategies, and current security events so that you can successfully accelerate network and security transformation. And now, here's what's on our mind this week.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Cloudy with a Chance of Trust, a podcast for technology leaders with listeners in over 50 countries in the world. And I'm your host, Pam Kapitowski. I'm really excited today to welcome Jay Patty, Senior Vice President of Cybersecurity Engineering at Regions Bank, to the show. Jay, welcome.
Thanks, Pam. It's good to be here.
So, Jay, okay, so you have more than 20 years of experience, right? And we're not going to actually add the years up because I'd be afraid of my years, right? I would say, 30 plus years. But for you, you have 20 years of experience in cybersecurity, including actually a really interesting time as the principal cyber advisor for the United States Missile Defense Agency. That's a mouthful, right? And a stint actually at the utility sector before joining Regions Bank. Can you actually, I'm like, okay, hold on. So you worked for the Missile Defense Agency, then you went into utility, and now you're in banking. So you didn't pick the easiest of industries to actually be a cybersecurity professional in.
Well, Pam, a lot of the reason surrounding that is I have to have a job that's meaningful. I enjoy work that's meaningful. And cybersecurity within sectors like defense, critical infrastructure, and banking certainly recognize the critical importance of these areas with national security, economic stability, societal trust, even if you just get right down to it. So I really enjoy the meaningful nature of the work and the challenge that it presents.
So did you actually kind of just, this is kind of a silly question, but how did you kind of fall into, because really that was your first real cyber position, right? At the defense agency. How did you actually find that role in the job?
Sure. So I started out my career as a presidential intern working for the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command. I was a network engineer by trade. These were in the days before cybersecurity was cybersecurity, right? I'm aging myself, but that's okay. So we all, cybersecurity and my career sort of grew up together. And security was something that was always of interest to me. I've always navigated to that piece in part. And just backing up a bit, growing up in North Alabama, really the sectors in North Alabama for professional career development are defense or critical infrastructure or another service industry such as that. So, yep, that's what led me there.
So Jay, so a lot of cybersecurity professionals found themselves starting in networking, right? Because to your point, it was about networking, going ahead and securing the data, securing the company. And then we developed this whole cybersecurity area, and a lot of, technical staff moved over. They started thinking about things differently. And then you had this whole explosion of cybersecurity, and which is, I can't imagine, right? IT without cybersecurity now, which is so crazy to think about. When you think about it, though, what actually drew you to cyber specifically to really move over from networking, or was it always just kind of part of who you were?
So I think it was really the emergence of cybersecurity, the evolution of cybersecurity, understanding the high stakes and the challenges associated with cybersecurity early on that really drew my interest and desire to be in that field. You have to think about it. When I started in the world of cyber, we were still 28.8, 56K modems. You didn't have a lot of, the attack surface was much different then. The words weren't even there in terms of cyber. But watching that evolution, watching the way our world reacted to cyber and watching our world embrace all of technology and everything we do, it's always evolving, it's always changing. And that's, scenery changing is always a good thing to keep interest. And certainly there's no lack of that in cyber.
Okay, so you've dated us because some of the younger people listening to this podcast are like, a modem? Like, do you remember the sounds it would make? It would be great, right? It's kind of like the
Absolutely.
rotary phone that was hanging on our wall in our kitchen. It was the only phone in the house. And yeah, that was a whole nother life ago, I swear. You just kind of brought me back to it, to my childhood. So talk a little bit to us about, because I think this is so interesting, you know, again, being with the Missile Defense Agency. Can you talk a little bit about what the day in the life of a principal cyber advisor was and what you kind of focused on every day?
Sure. So I will speak to, I had several roles in the Department of Defense. I'll sort of go through the ones at the Missile Defense Agency, and I'll sort of walk you through what a day in the life of, in that role was. So I started out as a cyber weapon system specialist for an international program supporting flight testing, missile flight testing, both in U.S. and abroad, which was very interesting because obviously the secure nature of DoD networks and integrating foreign weapon systems into those networks was always a challenge and certainly a huge security challenge there. Moved from there into the counterintelligence and cyberspace mission for the Missile Defense Agency. I won't say too much about that, but just say that I ran the cybersecurity lab there, and we conducted cyber investigation activities associated with missile defense targets and people. And then from there, I moved, stayed in the Technical Intelligence Directorate and became the principal cyber advisor to the Director of Technical Intelligence. Now, write that on a resume, right? That's a lot of words. A day in the life, I would say I'll give you sort of a month. One day I might be supporting a flight test in PMRF in Kauai, Hawaii. The next day I might be at Fort Greely assessing cybersecurity at a power plant. The next day, we might be in attending security intelligence briefings at the Mark Center in Washington, D.C. So it was a whole lot of different things, a whole lot of varied work. And then at the end, there was a tremendous focus on the defense industrial base, which is to say the contractors that support defenses. You know, as we all know, our government doesn't create widgets much anymore, right? We don't create our own weapons. We hire contractors to do that for us. So most of the defense department's sensitive data sits on contractor networks. And late in my career in defense, the sector began to realize that they were losing the battle because that data was leaving those critical defense contractors. And so we spent a lot of time working with all the big names in defense contracting, building a program together to assist them with their cybersecurity journey and protecting DoD information as well as their own. So lots
wow.
of fun.
Man, I have to say thank you to you and to all those who keep this country safe. You know, as being a U.S. citizen, I don't really think about my safety because we have people like you and all those that do this on a daily basis that keep us all safe in so many different ways. So thank you to all of you that do that out there, because we don't give, you know, thanks enough to all of you behind the scenes keeping this country safe. So thank you. So now,
I agree, Pam, 100%. And for all those that continue to fight that battle, keep going.
Oh,
keep charging.
Absolutely. Now, shifting gears a little bit, you next then moved on after the DoD to Atlanta-based utility Southern Company. What are some of the unique challenges of working in a critical infrastructure sector like energy?
So, you know, it's challenging, it's different, but it's also more of the same. So my job at Southern Company was to protect the IT-OT boundary, which is information technology, operational technology boundary. So I was the last line of defense between power plants, substations, and OT infrastructure that obviously was the most critical that the utility had. I would say from a individual unique challenge, leaving defense and coming to work for the private sector, not so much critical infrastructure, was not having the visibility, not having the access to the threat intel of what the foreign actors and what the what adversary is actively trying to do on a day-to-day basis, not being able to walk into my, you know, office inside a skiff, which is basically a vault inside a vault inside a vault inside a basement inside a Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville. So not having visibility into that made it challenging. There's a lot of open source intelligence out there. There's a lot of intel that comes out of other trusted sources, but you know, the reliability of the data that we got, that we received in the intel community was just high fidelity. And that made a tremendous amount of difference.
That's really interesting to think about that, the shift that you had to go through to adjust from here. You have all this data being thrown at you. You have this massive agency, right, that is focused on understanding the threats and figuring out, you know, what to do about them. And now you're shifting to, you know, a highly regulated critical infrastructure company where you have to find data differently. That must have been really nerve-wracking. Now that I'm sitting, when we had our prep for this show, I never really thought about it until you laid it out. Wow, talk about going from here's all this information to now I'm going to have to find the information versus a lot of the information is being brought to you, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you could somewhat be proactive when you're in the defense industry, especially when you have all this intelligence. Even if it's low fidelity intelligence, it's still somewhat factual, right? All information has value. When you leave that and you walk into the private sector and that's gone, a lot of those proactive controls that you are able to implement knowingly based on that information are just not available to you. So I hate to say we wing it, but, and that's probably not the right word, but you know, a lot of it is best guess, but cyber is best guess. So mm-hmm. Even with the intelligence we had, it was still best guess, right?
Right, right. So then
it's risk and reward. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a good point of the risk, you know, risk and reward. So when you actually talk a little bit about how you then, was it easy then to adapt to moving from Southern Company to the banking industry? Or were there, you know, based on unique, were there different regulations that you had to adhere to when you joined Regions?
Obviously, yes. So critical infrastructure was regulated by, you know, NERC-SIP and FERC requirements, so federal requirements. NERC is a very high level set of requirements that the OT side of the house has to meet. When you go into financial industry, it's regulated by, you know, the Fed, Federal Reserve Bank, and the challenges there are completely different. They are the visibility that the Fed has into the banking institution, the partnership between those organizations, between the banking institution and the Fed is much more dynamic than what we saw in critical infrastructure. We have Fed audits every year at Regions, which we had every couple of years, maybe every 3 years at Southern Company. So not to say the challenges were less or the challenges are more, they're just different in terms of the scope of these audits, what they look at. There is no real segmentation in terms of what can be audited and what can't be audited. In the banking industry, everything is auditable, which is a significant difference, right? So all programs and all aspects of programs, from policy all the way down to how you're enacting that policy.
So can you compare and contrast a little bit the work of defending the DoD assets, critical infrastructure, and financial institutions? Because you look at the three main, you know, the three industries you've worked in, and talk a little bit about maybe what changed or what was the same between them.
Sure. I'll tell you something interesting in my career. I had a general officer that I worked with closely, and he used to talk about the, you know, defense data being like dollars in the bank, and how we needed to protect defense data like it was the money that we have in the bank, like the financial institutions protect our money in the bank, right? And that's it's a great analogy, because it's also very accurate. So again, I chose the industries that I went into because I wanted that challenge, right? I wanted those high stakes. So I would say that ultimately the high stakes involved in defending against cyber attacks on all three industries include a lot of the same challenges: state-sponsored groups, criminal actors, hacktivists, all of the above. It's really not that much different. So when you contrast the three industries, really there's more similar about them than there is dissimilar. All the environments are dynamic, fast-paced. Obviously, all of cyber requires constant learning and adaptation. So, you know, staying ahead of the challenge in a critical field is really, it carries among all three.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's such different industries, but yet, to your point, they're all dealing with very similar things when it comes to cybersecurity.
They really are. They really are. And even when you look at regulatory and compliance challenges, I mean, all three are regulated. Mm-hmm. I mean, from you know, risk management framework and DoD, NERC, SIP, and critical infrastructure, and then, you know, the Fed and banking. It's all three similar in terms of you know, regulatory entities recognizing the criticality of the industry and wanting to ensure that compliance is there and that standards are there to be complied with.
Jay, if you look back at those three industries, were there times in which you had to change people's minds that they didn't really think something needed to be done, or, hey, we're just good? If you did, you know, and hopefully, gosh, in the DoD, they didn't, right? but if you did encounter that, you know, how did you deal with that?
So that's an interesting question. You know, the other thing that's holds true amongst all of cybersecurity is that we partner with industry, with cutting edge technology partners, such as Zscaler, for example, to ensure that we are protecting our assets, protecting our data, protecting our infrastructure adequately from the threat that we know about and the threat that we don't. But I say all that just to say, these sales folks come in and they want to sell us a tool, right? They want to sell me the latest and greatest widget. They sell to me. I'm a pretty willing customer. By the time I've got somebody in front of me, I understand the technology. I know where I'm going. I'm interested in it. Then I have to take that technology back, or any cybersecurity leader has to take that technology back and then sell it to everybody else. Because let's be honest, cybersecurity oftentimes can be a hindrance. It can oftentimes be a bump in the road that an application developer or a system owner or any other person outside of security, more than they want to bite off and chew. It doesn't contribute in their mind to the goals that they have set for themselves. So we often talked about getting left to bang, right? Bringing cybersecurity in early, integrating cybersecurity into those product lines, into those products, into those tools, into those systems. And in doing so, it allows that bump in the road to be a much smaller, you know, stick in the road versus a bump, if you will, just because of that. So honestly, that's another thing that's similar across all industry. You're always selling your wares. You always have to convince people that there is a need, there's necessity. And I would say that need and necessity has evolved in my experience over time as well, right? So when I first started and there wasn't a cyber, you know, you were just trying to do the basics, you know, basic hygiene, do the best you can based on what you don't know. And selling those practices was, I guess, a little bit easier until they started, you know, swinging that pendulum too far towards security. And then there was the time where the shock and awe, you know, you're going to get hacked, you're going to get compromised, you're going to get malware, and everybody, you know, all, not everybody, but most of industry was okay, yeah, sure, it's going to happen. And then you have things like, you know, I love you bug, and malware starts affecting people. So we swing the pendulum even more. And then, you know, there's a period of everybody seeing other companies, other entities getting compromised, but they're not getting compromised. So that pendulum starts to swing back the other way. And then the shock and awe doesn't work anymore. And then everything begins to normal out. And then you go back to that sales piece, right? You're always convincing people that this is why you need to do the work that you need to do. This is why this infrastructure needs to be protected. And it's really the risk associated with loss of whatever, you know, whatever you're protecting, whether that be defense data, whether that be, you know, dollars, whether that be customer PII, whether that be critical infrastructure in terms of a generating plant, and the distributed control systems that sit inside those organizations, inside those plants, or, you know, you're really trying to help others that don't understand the risk to their systems, understand that risk and why these tools and why cyber needs to be built in.
You know, years ago, we started saying about the fact of it's not about if, it's about when, right? And to your point, you see things in the news, everybody gets heightened, right? Everybody's looking, checking all this, worrying, and then things settle down. And then they go back to their ways and like, well, we've been good. We're good, right? And it just always baffles me when I walk into an organization and they're like, no need to change. But yet the architecture and the technology is of yesterday. You're not agile. You're not flexible. How do you respond quickly if something does happen, right? I think a lot of times I'll tell people the technology is what's going to hopefully limit the blast, because the blast is coming. But can I limit what's going to happen, right? And quickly come back from it.
You're spot on, Pam. I often talk when I talk to folks about cybersecurity. What I explain is, cybersecurity teams have to get it right all the time. Adversary only has to get it right one time. And once they're inside your system, once they've taken advantage of whatever exploit they can, it's easier for them then. Once they've acquired their goal, they can do most anything they want. So being right all the time is impossible, as we all know. So having that visibility, having good tool sets, evolving with the threat, evolving with the risk is absolutely a mandatory requirement in today's time.
So Jay, you know, this has been an awesome conversation. You have such an interesting background that just fascinates me. I mean, we could spend hours talking about it. But if you had a look back, and maybe you have. I know I've looked back and I thought to myself, my goodness, what would I have told my younger self, right? What would I have actually told myself to do differently? What would that be for you?
That's a great question, Pam. I would say early on, focus more on the STEM fields, learn to understand the business aspects of the industry that you're working in, understand how what you do impacts them as much as what they do impacts cybersecurity. I think it's to sum it up, it's less listening and more hearing. How's that?
That's great. That is great. And so tell me, you know, you have been gracious enough to join us today while on vacation. I really appreciate that. So besides the fact that you're on vacation, you know, you have a very stressful job. You protect people's money, which is really important. Let's face it, right? Don't screw with anyone's money. And not to mention the fact that, you know, you helped go ahead and protect the people of the United States. So what does Jay do for fun?
Jay enjoys the outdoors, especially water. I grew up on a small lake in Alabama, and have never been able to separate myself from the water. So on a very stressful day, I don't care if it's 10 degrees outside or 85 degrees outside, I can go stick my feet in the water. Now I might get cold or I might get warm, but I go stick my feet in the water and it just drains all that stress right out. So, you know, having a hobby, having a release is absolutely critical, because everybody in this field does the same thing. Pam, you've lived it. And most of the listeners here are dealing with it every day. You can't take it home with you. You have to separate. You have to find a way, to enjoy that work-life balance, right? Because life will pass you by and all you've done is work. So, and that's very easy to do. It's a trap that's very easy to fall into with cybersecurity. So find something that you enjoy, preferably that doesn't include something electronic, and then go enjoy it.
And go back to
that's
the
what
basics,
I do.
Right? Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
That's awesome. I'm a water person too, whether it's actually water or snow. I'll take either one. That's why I live in the Midwest. Got to have both.
Yes, ma'am.
With that, Jay, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a really interesting conversation. Really enjoyed it. Thanks for joining us. And to all you out there, thanks so much for joining us also.
Appreciate it, Pam. Happy to be here.
And with that, we look forward to you guys going ahead and tuning in another time for another episode of Cloudy with a Chance of Trust. Take care.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Cloudy with a Chance of Trust. Check back with your podcast provider regularly for more episodes. Statements by Zscaler podcasters and guests are informational only and should never be construed as legal advice. You should consult with your legal advisor on matters related to you or your business. Zscaler makes no warranties, express, implied, or statutory as to the content of this podcast, and it is provided as is. Content on this podcast may contain forward-looking statements that are current as of the date of recording and subject to change. These statements are subject to the safe harbor provisions created by the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Full legal disclaimers are available at revolutionaries.zscaler.com. Copyright 2022.